You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It is the Friday show, Neil Atkinson, joined by Tezza Simakula and Chris Barber in the Anfield Rap studio. And we've got a cast of thousands. It's a bonanza. We've got Laura Hartley on Coventry, Rich Hobbs on Wolves, Pete Selby on Leicester, and we will have Phil Macbeth on Luton. Luton being a league game, and there are a small programme of league games this weekend, but it is about the quarterfinals of the FA Cup first and foremost. And Tezza, it's a bit of something for everyone. The only thing we sort of could do with, if you were to high-handedly move it around, not even from a biased Liverpool perspective, you know, I'd rather play Man United at Anfield than not, but you're all with those punches. I wouldn't mind the games that are Premier League versus Championship to be with the Championship side at home. I think that's my one thing I'd say I wouldn't mind being a bit different.
Yeah, I think anybody who kind of watches the FA Cup and has an interest in the FA Cup still kind of, you know, believes in the magic of the FA Cup. That kind of giant killing narrative still goes on season by season, but as more big teams kind of take the competitions more serious from probably the fourth round onwards,
yeah,
it's difficult for those kind of sides to either be, you know, guaranteed with playing a team on their level or even being the home side in the majority of the game. So I think depending on where some of the Championship teams are in the league will determine how serious they take the FA Cup game.
There is this time though, Chris, the good thing is from the Championship side's point of view is they themselves have an international break after this one. For it's the end of a run, this, and that's why I think it's actually quite canny timing for the FA Cup, because, you know, whoever you are, there's a slight element of, you might think you might still want to rotate even at the quarterfinal stage, but what are you rotating for? There's an international break on the horizon. You might want to manage players' minutes. You might want to not want to take risks with players who are injured. I think De Bruyne being ruled out for Belgium means he almost certainly will not feature for Manchester City, as an example, in amongst all of this. But still, regardless, I expect teams that are in it to go pretty much as strong as they can, because there's no mileage, there's no game on Wednesday to worry about.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when you look at the draw, it's got that sort of kind of equal measure. Nothing feels classic. Like, I'd have you back a couple of hours as well, maybe. Half three feels wrong on a Sunday. I don't love that. But I also think if you look at it, kind of, there's not a team there who winning it, like, you can't even say that someone like Man City could end up with naught this season. That could happen. And so they've all got to be all in, like you said. And also then you chuck in the international break, and I think you bang on too, because it's almost like this Maidstone curse where the little team's now away, or the smaller team is now away. And, you know, throwing some light from a personal point of view, I think Leicester are possibly the only team who can say we've definitely got a bigger fish to fry elsewhere, because, you know, even yourselves, and obviously I just said Man City, they could end up in a really weird situation where they don't get anything.
Mm-hmm.
That could happen. They could draw each other on Friday they can't.
You can't draw each other?
Not in Europe.
You can.
Can they?
Yeah, Arsenal, Man City, not Liverpool.
No,
but
yeah, sorry. But what I mean is, they could all be in situations where there's a lot less on the table, and this could be the trophy. So I think, and again, and every game is kind of like, you know, no one's got a doozy Coventry can beat Wolves, and Wolves don't want to be embarrassed at home to Coventry. Leicester can beat Chelsea, and then you've got sort of Newcastle have got to be like balls out of the bath. This is kind of they're the ones where I think this is the last bit of the season, because I feel like them finishing kind of anywhere in the league outside of the top four will underwhelm, purely because of how their seasons started and how last season ended. And they're not going to do the top four, so this is their last chance to not underwhelm, I think.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm looking. There's not a game that I wouldn't watch. There's not a game I'd turn off.
I think that is a big deal. It's nice that the spread as well. It makes a ton of sense in those instances, and I completely agree that every single one of them has something. You might turn it off if it gets 3-0, but you know you've got to go from there. We will have first and foremost. Then we've got Laura Hartley talking about Coventry, and then we'll have Rich Hobbs talking about Wolves. They will be doing both of those things back to back.
Joined by Laura Hartley to discuss Coventry, City, Wolverhampton Wanderers at the weekend in store in the FA Cup, but some good form leading into it, Laura. It's not perfect, don't get me wrong, but it's a Coventry side that at the minute looks, if you look outside the top four of the Championship, it looks about as good as West Brom. That's about the level that Coventry currently find themselves at. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair to say. We did have a disappointing result against West Brom a couple of weeks ago, which didn't really help our confidence going into it on that Friday night. But, you know, Wolves have got a lot more injuries than we have going into Saturday and going into the quarterfinal. We've just been boosted with Ben Sheaf coming back, who is key to our midfield. I think things are really missed when he's not there. So, yeah, he's key to our midfield and massive, massive boost to us heading into Saturday.
Heading into Saturday is, you know, it's obviously, it's got a Midlandsy element to it that cannot, you know, has to be mentioned, but it can perhaps be overstated a little bit as well, because ultimately nothing would make Coventry's season, not so much the idea of beating Wolves, you can do that in the third round, it's the idea of getting to a semi-final of the FA Cup.
100%. I mean, even at the moment, it's been such a long time since we've made the quarterfinals. It was 2009, our 2008-2009 season, which we last made the quarterfinals. So at the minute for us, you know, in terms of the league, we're kind of chasing that last spot, I guess, in the playoffs. And to make the semi-finals of the FA Cup, would be absolutely brilliant. And I guess the cherry on top of the cake for the last kind of year that we've had and building on the end of last season. So yeah, it's a massive achievement already for us. And if we won on Saturday, it would be absolutely incredible.
When you imagine the team for Saturday, obviously there is an international break in the Championship as well that immediately follows this. There is no reason why he doesn't go with his full-on strongest 11, isn't there? There's no reason at all why he doesn't just pick his strongest 11.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are very lucky in that, you know, we're really unlucky that Victor Torp is out injured. He's a doubt for Saturday. He's proven to be an absolutely brilliant signing for us. His first goal on his debut is absolutely spectacular. So to have him on the pitch would have been absolutely brilliant. But, you know, we work with the rest of the squad. But we have got an absolutely brilliant, strong start in 11 at the moment. It will be a really strong bench as well. Even if Robin starts, Sims and Wright, you've got O'Hare on the bench who we know can put those goals away and just run his heart out on that pitch as well.
When you mentioned there Mark Robbins, obviously, you know, he's got a bit of FA Cup pedigree back as well. He's, you know, he's quite an interesting figure, having sort of bounced around lower league football for an extended period of time. It's his second spell at Coventry, and he's not that far away from being one of the longest serving managers at one club in the entire league. Is the general feeling still that he's doing a good job under the circumstances?
Yeah, absolutely. He is quite literally our king. he's absolutely brilliant. The relationship, I mean, he's been with us now on the second spell for 7 years. He's just surpassed that 7-year anniversary for us. So it's something really special that he has been building, continues to build, and he still has that love for the club that we can see week in, week out. He still has that passion. And I think more importantly, something that we didn't really have even under the old owners is the relationship between him, the players, and the fans. We all are so connected to each other now, and you can really feel it.
with those players that you mentioned in there, you mentioned a couple of the players who are likely to start. The return this season of Hadji Wright is enormous. It is significant. It's 13 goals and 5 assists in the league alone. That places him in very, very good nick.
Yeah, he has been absolutely brilliant. I think, to be completely honest, him and Ellis Sims have had a slow start. I think a couple of fans definitely voiced their concerns, to be frank, with both of them, but they've really come into their own, and you can really see that. And Hadji Wright building up his tally. Amazing. Let's just hope that he can build on that on Saturday.
Build on Saturday. Give me a prediction.
Do you know what? I'm going to go 2-1, Carls.
I like it. I like it. Normal time or extra time?
Oh, normal. I can't take extra time.
No one can. Thank you very much indeed to Laura. 2-1 Coventry. I like it. It's aggressive stuff. Let's find out what Rich from Wolves thinks. Joined by Rich Hobbs from Wolves Fancast to talk about Wolverhampton Wanderers ahead of this game coming up against Coventry. It's been a season, Rich, where I think Wolves supporters, the general public, have been impressed by Wolves, have felt as though it's a successful campaign. I feel as though a little bit like this could be the first time, even allowed for the West Brom game in a way, because everyone knew that that was a derby. I know it has a Midlands rivalry sense, but my point here is that I think this could be the first time where there's real pressure on Wolves to get a result, that I think everyone will feel as though this is a game Wolves do need to win. FA Cup semi-final at Wembley will be part of a really good journey for Gary O'Neill's first season, but that means the pressure's on the flip side.
Yeah, I think you're right. Ultimately, Wolves got the most favourable draw out of any of the teams left in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it. We're playing a team in division below us at home. Like that's we could have drawn Liverpool. We could have drawn, you know, there's so many, you know, different scenarios to kind of plot your way to a semi-final. And Wolves have got the best one. That does give its level of pressure. Whether that's more pressure to a degree than the West Brom match, potentially, I think. The fact that we're now in a stage of a competition,
it's a different type of pressure, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think it's one where, although Coventry are having a good season, you know, they are still in kind of contention for his playoff, for, you know, probably the sixth place playoff position at the moment. We've got to make sure that we are on our guard and sometimes, you know, play the game that's in front of us, not the game that we want to play. And I think the fact that we can go into extra time and penalties kind of plays in a bit of an advantage for us if we can stay patient, if we can stay calm and focused. But, you know, with a slightly depleted forward line as much as anything else, going, you know, hell for leather in the first 10 minutes isn't necessarily going to give us the outcome we want. Whereas actually we can slowly break them down, keep calm, both on the pitch and as a collective on the fan base, then we should be okay. But, you know, you can definitely feel the excitement rising, and whether that kind of will come through as pressure, I don't quite know. But all of a sudden, I think like all fans are being faced with reality. Look, we're in a quarter final. We're top half of the table. We've got a real good chance of being, you know, playing at Wembley in a few weeks' time at this rate.
You're in a situation where you won 5 of your last 7 all comps. Obviously, the game to get here is part of that. There's huge positive stories in that journey, in that conversation. You know, some excellent victories away at Tottenham being a good one, away at Chelsea being a good one as well. The one that would worry me is that home game against Brentford. That's the one I'd be looking at going, we can't do that. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is. And I think you sometimes do just have to marry up the bad with the good. But ultimately, Wolves are a mid-table side, and there is always a Rick in them. And I mean, you say you can throw a Newcastle game as well, where we lost 3-0 to a team who effectively we're competing for the same space against. And, you know, ultimately we looked knackered. We really struggled against, same against Brentford. We looked just that little bit out of ideas. And I'm hopefully the fact that we've had a full week in between games again, because this isn't a team at the moment, unfortunately, built to play, you know, midweek, you know, 3 games in a week. You can see by the injuries as much as anything else that this is a team who are fatiguing. You do need that extra bit of rest at the moment to help sort of see us through. But, you know, the fact that we were able to turn it round against Fulham hopefully stands us in good stead. But you're right, this is a team we still have those blips. Fortunately, it feels like the blips come around a lot less frequently than before.
Team news then. First, do you think he will have a centre-forward option other than Fraser? And secondly, is there any chance of Neto?
Not really. Kuna may be fit. They're saying it's probably more likely going to be after the international break. Considering what sort of happened with Neto in terms of, you know, he went off at half-time against Newcastle with a potential tweaked hamstring. They said he was fit, then got hooked again against Fulham and is now out again. Whether it was the same hamstring or not, but we should have just rested him. I don't quite understand why we didn't. I mean, I know that's not necessarily prioritising the league. I think Nathan Fraser held the line really well. He also had a good cameo against Brentford in the cup as well, which I think, again, something will stand him in good stead for. He's played, you know, started in a league game and didn't do himself a disservice. When that fact he has, you know, scored against a team like Brentford in a cup match, and now he's playing arguably a lower level opposition, I wouldn't be too concerned if we go Nathan. I'd rather we play Nathan Fraser than us, you know, chuck on Sarabia in a quote unquote false nine or, you know, Mateus Kuna, whose hamstrings being held together with masking tape.
So it's a matter, therefore, of, as you said there about patience, is this part of the reason why patience matters, that Wolves have got to make sure that they're scoring the first goal in the game?
Yeah. I mean, this game against Fulham is a tricky one, because you're looking on paper and you go, well, 2-1 win, Wolves were, you know, scored, you know, first two, Fulham get a consolation goal in added time, effectively. But we looked shaky in that first half, and we, you know, we had to very much dig deep, as it were, rely on that back line to hold it firm until they started to create a little bit more going forwards. And if similar, we're going to have to do the same on Saturday. It's not to say that, you know, we should put 10 men behind the ball against Championship opposition, but I think just be mindful that, you know, we do have these injuries. We aren't quite as dynamic as we were when ultimately without our front three forward players in Neto, Bang and Kuna, and as well as Bellegarde probably going to be out as well. It's not healthy readings when you look at it like that. So it's going to require a different approach, and I don't think us going hell for leathers for necessarily the right one. But ultimately, the players that we've got, that makes us somewhat more defensive, because, you know, the drop-off in quality. What we don't want to be in a position is actually if we go a goal behind in, you know, first half, but we don't have any options to really shake things up. That's when the pressure will really start to tell, in terms of, you know, whether we can get our forward players to commit that bit more, whether the wing-backs can. And I think that's been the most positive sign for Wolves in recent weeks, that particularly when we lost Kuna and ultimately now Neto, players are stepping up and scoring. You had João Gomes getting two against Spurs. Lamine has been getting on the score sheet. Even the Semedo of the weekend contributed as well, and eight Nori. I mean, Semedo's was an own goal. But actually, you know, we're getting goals from other positions now, but that's mainly due to the fact that our forward players aren't quite at the same level as the likes of Kuna and Neto.
Okay. Prediction?
2-0 Wolves. I think we'll win. I think we will manage that game out when we need to. And, you know, it's going to be harder than I think people will want it to be. But there's still enough, you know, despite some of those injuries, there's still more than enough quality, I think.
Okay. Thank you very much to Rich. Let's get back over.
Great stuff from Laura and Rich. Very pleased for Laura to join us for the first time. I want to move on and talk about the next of the quarterfinals, Manchester City versus Newcastle. Tezza, I know Chris watched Chelsea-Newcastle, obviously, on Monday night, so we'll bring him in as well in a second. But Newcastle just look shattered. They just look so, so tired. The only thing that is in the back of my mind, they look so tired. The one thing that occurred to me is, are they targeting this one? Like, has he got a training regime that's leading into getting them to peak for this game? Because the last couple of games, the Chelsea game in particular, they just look a shadow of themselves.
Yeah, I watched the performance against Chelsea, and I think the biggest kind of noticeable thing that you see when you watch Newcastle is just the lack in strength and depth. Like, I think obviously they've had constraints with financial fair play and signing players in the January just gone, but realistically what Eddie Howe's done with the squad that he has and some of the players who have been at Newcastle for quite a long time, you know, some of them have come through the academy or have played from Championship days, the likes of like Longstaff and Lascelles and Matt Ritchie, Murphy. And Jacob Murphy, Emil Kraft, who came on, and even the way all the way down to Dubravka is now the number one because Pope's injured. It's almost like they've stumbled into this position, which obviously they did because they couldn't have foreseen that, you know, they were going to get billionaires who were going to take them over. But to your point of them being knackered, yeah, the Eddie Howe game in, game out has probably 13, 14 players that he really focuses on and wants to maximise their performance from. And, you know, two or three injuries, well, they've had more than that this season, but two or three injuries and their performance level dips. And I think Gordon came off in the first half and it... Murphy comes on, but apart from Murphy coming on, there was no one else on the bench for them to rotate. So the only way Howe could probably change the fatigue levels is if they didn't press as high and if they were almost a little bit more passive and try to, you know, play 60 minutes a little bit on the back foot, allow City to have the ball and then kind of just go, last half an hour, we'll go for it.
It's John Gibbs from the Anfield Wrap with a read courtesy of NordVPN. NordVPN have been partnering us for a while and we really appreciate their support, and I personally really appreciate their service because there is lots of benefits to using a NordVPN. First of all, shielding your data from snoops and criminals. It helps shield your IP address and secures your online traffic with state-of-the-art encryption. You can protect yourselves on public Wi-Fi. So if you want to catch up on your favourite shows or podcasts on hotel Wi-Fi, you can make sure you're the only one listening. It is also available on all your devices, so you can set it up to 6 devices with a single VPN subscription. And also, one of the favourite things about it for lots of people, including me, is listening and watching all your favourite shows abroad. So if you are in the UK and you'd like to watch something this weekend, maybe it's Saturday at 3 o'clock, that isn't available in the UK, but is available to watch in other countries, you can download the NordVPN, access different TV networks across the world and enjoy football that way. It also works when you're travelling, of course, so if you don't want to miss your favourite TV shows, whatever they might be, you can use the NordVPN to help you access that wherever you are in the world. We have got a special offer for them as well. So get your NordVPN plan. Go to nordvpn.com/TAW. nordvpn.com/TAW. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast as well. The link is also in our episode description below. Thanks a lot to Nord again, and back to the show.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I saw them on Monday night. It was quite... You talked about the press and things like that. Like, they had this, but they seem to be in this situation where they quite often, when we attacked with the ball, it was like the whole half was just ours out of nowhere. And I feel like they had no real midfield. But then they've got in someone like Isaac, Like the goal at Anfield, they did that out of nothing. He will put it away. He can finish, and he will. And I just think if they can swell and they can do something, because when Jacob Murthy got that second, no one really did panic, but the whole game was like it had that Bundesliga sort of like no one's in charge here. They had a bit Lord of the Flies out. The grown ups have left type thing, but everything landed at Chelsea's favour, or everything sort of like worked better for them, and that probably came down to depth, quality of sort of the individual. I just think, and then we mean when you look at like Dan Burn sort of turning like a microwave, they are gonna be in trouble. But if I can move on to sort of City in that sense of, I've got this thing at the minute with them where I kind of, and it's a bit mad, but I think they're in a situation where all of their players are the best at doing what they're good at doing. So the Foden goal against United, he can do that. Haaland, the Everton game for Haaland was it, of like, he doesn't actually, again last week at Anfield, he's really good at, if he gets a chance, he'll score it. But they haven't, I don't think, got that player who doesn't make sense and just things happen, they do things, and that's sort of like, even like players like those sort of top, like Messi and Ronaldo, they weren't actually just good at doing what they did. They had this sort of like kind of like energy around this sort of like impact on that. And I just don't think City have got those players at the minute. So if they're playing football and they're doing it, it all goes well. Go on.
No, I think, when I was watching at Anfield last week, one of the things that I was, when my brain wasn't just one long scream, one of the things that I was thinking was, this would both A, make more sense, but B, be less predictable if Gundogan was on the pitch. Idea of someone, and you've seen it, when a season's got to a certain point, the player who pops up, but doesn't just pop up with, as you say, the Phil Foden goal. And Phil Foden scores two versions of the Phil Foden goal against Man United, by the way.
Yeah.
But there's still the Phil Foden goal. But you like, your last season attack, you had Gundogan like powering and headers from 12 yards. The next game he's passing into that. And yeah. I think it's a really interesting thing where for City this year, you've sort of felt like Rodri's a bit of that. But in a certain game, Rodri's got enough to do going the other way. And I think that's a really interesting. So I think you've actually put your finger on something around City at the minute that I think is sort like, Alvarez has got a lot of qualities, but he doesn't feel like a bit of a wild card.
And I don't think I really put it together too well just then, annoyingly into a microphone. But in that sense of, yeah, last season they had those players, and Bernardo Silva's got it in him. He can kind of do different stuff. But I just think they've got that thing when they are all the top 1% of that position, of that type of player in that formation. But it does mean that if it gets a bit rough or a bit tense, and they need it to sort of swell and something to happen, I don't know where you're looking, because Haaland isn't going to do that. And I thought Carragher made that good point about, if you're looking at who's the best player, him compared to someone like Van Dijk, you can't say he's a better, because he's just really good at doing what he's meant to do in his thing. And same with Foden. And I just think De Bruyne is having obviously a quiet season and he's injured. But yeah, last season they had, I mean, Rodri did it last season, but again, they had more kind of wider midfielders, better midfielders last season, I think.
Go back to 2019, to your sort of point, in a really weird way, Gabriel Jesus sort of makes sense to your argument. Raheem Sterling sort of makes sense to your argument.
Mahrez had minute moments.
Mahrez, Sane in 2018-19, even David Silva. And then you've also still got Gundogan. To your point, the sort of the Doku, and it's interesting, Doku actually hits the post at Anfield.
Doku's
sort of
it. But then Doku's got this thing, we were just talking about you get stats wrong. Something like, until recently, hadn't scored or assisted since against Bournemouth in November. Like, he's having quite a weird season where he just looks really good and impactful, but there's not really many metrics to actually. And I think if Jack Grealish was having the season he had last year, we wouldn't have seen Doku that often this season. It's sort of been because neither of them have really grabbed it by the bollocks and sort of done anything with it that you've got. But yeah, I just think there's this weird, so come back on sort of Newcastle, if they can just not be shit and not make mistakes and not give them a half to themselves and not leave Dan Burn one-on-one against effectively anyone, including his own shadow, then they can do something, because Isaac can score. If Gordon's back and playing, because he's just been picked today for the England squad, so I'm not sure he's going to be in any major danger, but I don't know that. He obviously came off quite early. And I just wonder, like, is there something of, like, don't know. But then again, that's where the conversation of where the playing comes into play, because the Etihad's not fun and not a laugh. And doesn't really deliver.
I think the Etihad factor, I think if this was the other way around, it'd be really, really interesting. In there, you do feel as though, the other thing to point out as well, Tezzer, City have had a week. Mm-hmm. And if I was, you know, he might have had a look at anything really, because that's the sort of manager he is. But City have had a week, and I think if they've had a tough midweek European or something like that, you could do pull a bit of a face. But ultimately, you do feel as though with a week's prep, City should be fine.
Yeah, and kind of just going back to the point that you both made on City kind of lacking that star power in the individual brilliance. I think that's just down to the manager. The manager's taking that away from Manchester City as a whole, season in, season out. He's got rid of those kind of I'm going to get the ball and do what I want to do type players, and he's got players that fit within his system and structure. What kind of Guardiola is a genius or a master of is creating a structure and everyone buying into that, because a lot of City's best or star players over the years, if they played for Liverpool or Man United or Arsenal or Chelsea, I think they'd be looked at quite differently. I think it's because Guardiola has basically a pick of all the top players, and he's put them all together that they almost outshine each other in a sense, because to me, in my eyes, that player that you're talking about should be Phil Foden. It should be, you're the talisman, you have a bit of magic, you can do something that...
We're telling a shape in you,
yeah.
Basically. Your men are not be where we expect you to be in between the...
Yeah, and I think that also comes down to the way football is in general with tactics and how, you know, you can't carry a number 10 or a luxury player between the lines, and they all have to fit into the bigger picture rather than the picture fitting around them. And I think the kind of, to your point, Neil, that you were talking about City, I think they will still rotate. I don't know how much he will rotate. Against Copenhagen, it was very much so, before the Liverpool game, it was very much so, you know, all the players that haven't played in the run-up in the big games that are coming up, we're going to give you a little bit of a go. But I think you might see Kovacic, Nunes, Doku probably start, and then maybe like the likes of Alvarez. Is KDB injured now?
So they've ruled him out of the Belgium squad with a minor groin injury.
Yeah.
And I think it takes some brass neck to rule him out of the international game, and then he featured him in any way in the FA Cup game. And I just sort of wondered if he's dealt on that, Guardiola. He just thought, you know what? We pull him from Belgium because it's not a big international break.
He's Belgian captain too, isn't he? Yeah, so he's not going to go and play for City this weekend, is he?
You wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's probably a case of who can I not play and still probably have enough to deal with Newcastle, and who do I need to still have a bit of match rhythm but probably won't be in the running, because Guardiola does a thing where he chops and changes and he tries out a few things in the first 3 months of the season. But when it comes to kind of March, February, March onwards, he sticks with his core 13, 14, 15 players, and he'll just chop and change if needed. And I think that's what will be the case. Obviously, the big miss will be Edison. Ortega will come in, but I mean, they don't really lack in terms of ball playing from Ortega, because he actually might be better than Edison. Long range passing, which is some feat to say.
It's quite a thing to say.
It is quite a feat to say, but what I've watched Ortega quite a bit, and yeah, he may not be as good as one-on-one shot stopping, but in terms of on the feet, ball to feet, he's a top goalkeeper.
There we are. Okay, as I say, since you've had a week to prepare, I think that may well be the dividing line. Here's Pete Selby on Leicester before we speak to Chris on Chelsea.
Joined by Pete Selby. To talk about Leicester, who face Chelsea this weekend. But as is often the case when this stuff rolls around, it's a quarter-final of the FA Cup. It's Sunday, it's 12:45. It's all the hits. Leicester looking to demonstrate what they are, a Premier League team in waiting. But at the top of the Championship, Pete, things are really tightened up. So I can say that I think Leicester are a Premier League team in waiting, but you're probably thinking to yourself, we're waiting longer than I'd have liked us to have done.
It's been smooth progress this season until literally about 2 weeks ago. And then it's all kind of, it's all happened in the last, say, two and a half, say, weeks. We've got problems off the field with possible points deductions. We've got slight issues on the field by losing a couple of games on the bounce and having essentially three chasers in a league title tilt. And then you've got the FA Cup as a distraction. And then you get through to the quarterfinals and you play take on Chelsea. So it is all go at Leicester. It's all three are very intriguing, very interested. And also kind of excited if a points deduction can be, but it adds a spanner into the works. In terms of the FA Cup, though, away at Chelsea, it's not quite the draw he wanted. You know, Coventry would have been a great draw, obviously, but away at Stamford Bridge, they scraped past Leeds. I can see no reason why Leicester can't give them a fright, say, on Sunday.
Give them a fright. I mean, let's talk about this situation. When I just say, let's just go through what you're detailing. All relatively smooth progress. End of January, beat Swansea 3-1, go to Stoke, score 5, go to Watford, win, beat Sheffield Wednesday. But then, defeat against Middlesbrough at home, defeat away at Leeds United when it felt like everything was in Leicester's grasp, defeat at home then to QPR, and then get yourselves a good win against Sunderland, but then a draw against Hull City. It's, you know, there is a good break after this game before there is the international break and it does hit the Championship as well. So you get a bit of time to recharge. So you can throw everything into this, which I think is the big positive. But they are some rocky results. You do need to right this ship the other side of the international break, don't you?
Yeah, they are some rocky results. I mean, Middlesbrough have got a bit of a hook over Leicester at the moment this season. They've worked out how to play and fair play to them. Leicester were still dominant in the games. If anyone saw the game against Leeds, how Leicester lost, I'm not entirely sure. They should have been 3-0 with some gilt-edged chances. So when you lose the two games on the bounce, we were saying, on for Fox's sake, that everything's fine. They're playing well. It's just they've had two disappointing results. Should have beaten Leeds. Got QPR at home on Saturday. Beat them, no worries. Of course, that didn't happen. And then the alarm bells start to ring slightly. Hang on, we've now hit the buffers. Since then, they have righted it by winning away and then getting the points at Hull are a good side, and I think next season will be very dangerous if they can keep some of their best players. So that wasn't the worst result. But the one thing Leicester have got is they've got challengers who are in amazing form. You've got Leeds United, who essentially went 9 or 10 wins on the bounce before a recent draw. You've got Ipswich, who remarkably have turned their season round after a real blip of 9 games over Christmas. And now flying, and you've got Southampton still there. And the one thing that those three teams have is that they have an awful lot of goal scorers.
Yeah.
And so the one thing Leicester don't have, if it doesn't click for Leicester, then the goals will dry up. But still very confident about getting promoted. But it's quite rare to have such a good season and then look behind you and not see just one team in the rear windows, but to see three teams going for through. The gap between fourth and fifth in the Championship at the end of the season will be over 20 points, in my opinion, which is remarkable. And there's going to be some stunning season rewarded by pretty safe playoff places.
I mean, just on that quickly, because you're watching this football, but you watch a lot of Premier League football, I just don't think the gap's a matter of sort of counting the number of points. I think the nature of the football that's played by Leicester, Leeds, Ipswich and Southampton is just markedly different to that played by West Brom, Norwich, Hull, Coventry, to name 5th to 8th there as you go all the way through. That's really fair, isn't it, Pete? You know, that we have got here, at the very least, three former Premier League teams, but arguably three Premier League teams in waiting, plus Ipswich, who are a real dark horse who play some great football. There is a massive difference, isn't there, between those four and the rest?
Absolutely. It really is those four are miles clearer than anyone else in the league. Leicester, and also you can look at the way that they're playing now. They're playing completely different style to what they were in the Premier League recently. Southampton, Russell Martin, completely different football, very enjoyable looking football, lots of goals. We've got lots of goal scorers, some great loan signings as well, and are very entertaining. Leicester playing a completely different style of football than under Brendan Rodgers with Enzo Maresca. It's working, it's top of the league, and it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out in the Premier League next year if they get promoted. And Leeds United, the thing with Leeds, in my opinion, is that they have just got players, a bit like Leicester, they've got players who are just fundamentally better than anyone else in the Championship. And they just needed to be a solid team with a solid manager. And naturally, they will go up in the, they will have a brilliant home record. And naturally, they will be towards the top of the table. Ipswich, I think a lot has to do with the manager. They play some brilliant football. You look at the players that they've signed. They're still signing players that not necessarily would fit into a top four team in the Championship who are flying. You think, hang on, they must be of interest for teams further down. But I think the manager is top notch there. And if they don't go up, fortunately, I think he will then be picked off by some of the clubs in the Premier League. Very much in the case of Enzo Maresca, But I will also say about Enzo Maresca, with what's happening away from on the pitch stuff, I think there's still a chance that Leicester could not only win the league or get promoted, but get promoted to the Premier League and still start next season without Enzo Maresca in charge.
What is the off the field stuff you're referring to, Pete?
Well, Leicester have got issues financially. And are very different to Everton and are very different to Nottingham Forest. Leicester ultimately have been a victim, in my opinion, of their own success. You've got a team here, we know they won the league, we know they've been top five for a number of seasons, won the FA Cup. But we know also that Leicester sell one of their main assets every season. Now, what does season upon season upon season in the Premier League success bring? It brings high wages and it brings rewards to players who have been there for an awful long time and deserve these high wages, bonuses, etc. And Leicester's expenditure on wages, in my opinion, the figures match up as well, has been too high. But ultimately, you need Premier League football to keep that going. They failed to sell a player, and in the season after we won the FA Cup, and we spent around about £40 to £60 million roughly on players. Now, that doesn't sound a lot, but we're talking about Leicester City here. The season after, we get relegated. In that summer, you may remember, this is the big bugbear with Everton, Leicester did not sign a player in that summer all the way until basically the last second, because we were going to sell Wesley Fofana. The reason we didn't is because we had to apply financial fair play. Other sides like Everton go ahead and buy players knowing that they're actually going to be failing and ultimately stay up unless they go down. But now it turns out that Leicester actually may have very finally just gone beyond that red line by signing a few players in the transfer window in January, which works out terribly. Christiansen, Suter, etc. So, yes, they may have broken the rules. We'll know very, very shortly. But then also, when you drop down into the Championship, you then have to balance the books. We balanced the books, we thought, by selling Barnes, by selling Maddison before the 30th of June when Leicester's records are they sold year ends. They sold him on the 28th to Tottenham. But it turns out that obviously you can only lose £35 million a season in the Premier League, £105 million over a three-year period. That drops down to £15 million when you're in the Championship. So the Championship turn around and say, right, the EFL, and Leicester, we want to know what your plan is. Leicester turn around and say, we don't need to tell you because technically, two of those 3 years, we were a Premier League club. So we're going to go by Premier League rules, which means that we don't need to tell you until our financial records are published. That's what the argument was weeks ago. And it still looks like that Leicester still might break that 3 year period for this year as well. So we've got 3 years in the Premier League, and then the following year, 3 years, including the Championship. Now, obviously, that doesn't end until the 30th of June. So it might be the case that Leicester get promoted from the Premier League and sell Keenan, who'd be holding price of £35 million to balance the books. How that works out, why that works out, I'll put my hands in the air and go, that's crazy. So they are a slight victim of their success. And it's not like they've completely overspent and taken a massive gamble in the Premier League like Forest have. They've just generally overspent. They've gone beyond their means. They've got promoted and they've just gone, right, we're going to try and stay in the Premier League and argue the case, and you can maybe understand with their own or why they've done that or how that's happened. And Everton have basically just bought terribly and have been poorly run, essentially, and they know what they've done there at Everton, but it's about whether the points that they've been haven't taken off are actually merited for the actual amount that they've gone over. So it is, I'm not defending the football club, but you can see why. Ultimately, it will rest with the owners or rest with the directors, and they have a big red line in football. You cannot cross that red line. If you do, you're going to get the book thrown at you. And what happened in the last couple of days with Premier League clubs voting to basically say, right, we can spend up to 85% of our income, that's a completely different story, but there we go. I am worried for Leicester because I think if they get promoted, they'll start on minus 10 by the looks of it. If they don't get promoted, then they will start on minus 10 in the Championship. They'll get a fine from the Championship. But how can it be for a club who, from an outside point of view, around football, you would look at Leicester and go, they have not overspent. They have sold quite a lot of players. They've sold essentially nearly £200 million of players in the last 18 to 2 years. And they've still broken the financial fair play, even though they've gone down and then come straight back up. that, for me, fundamentally means that the rules are slightly wrong. It means that if you get relegated, you will literally have to completely gut your side and gut your squad. Now, some people might say, well, that's just desserts.
No, the cliff edges are too steep, Pete. I've been making this argument for years. The cliff edges are far, far, far too steep. And it's one of the reasons why clubs gamble too much in order to stay up, is because the cliff edges are just too much. So you end up in this situation where you're incentivizing bad behavior. And I say bad there, you know, I take your general point, but you're incentivizing a certain type of behavior. And then if that certain type of behavior doesn't get a certain result, it's almost like a double jeopardy punishment, in that with the players that you got weren't quite up to snuff, and that's one of the reasons why you've gone down. But now you've got all the obligations around that, and you've now got to deal with that again. And then when you clamber back up, the exhausting process of getting back up the massive steep cliff face also sort of does your income on the other side. And, you know, I look at other nations where obviously no one ever wants to get relegated, but getting relegated doesn't feel like it's the absolute end of the world. That means everything's got to change. And that is something which I think English football's got to get closer and closer to. And I actually think the same thing applies at the Championship at the other end, where the difference between the Championship and League One is far too great as well. And that leads to clubs making a complete mess of themselves in the bottom half of the Championship.
And the one thing that these rules, which I understand when they were brought in, and they are outdated because it's from 2013, so £35 million isn't the right amount. It should be nearer £60 million in theory now, with inflation, etc., in the way football prices have gone up in terms of the players' wages, etc. But what it does, it stops a club the size of Leicester being part of the top 10 of the Premier League for an extended period of time. You can have Leicester in there for longer than the size of the club would warrant under these rules. It means you, A, have to sell your best player, one of their best players, every single season, or you will break the rules, because essentially that's what Leicester have done. They've finally gone out and blown the bank on massive transfer fees. Secondly, you have to sell your players before they run out their contracts. So you can't have an Iosi Perez and a Yuri Tielemans going free. You have to let them go, and you have to sell them when other clubs come knocking. And the third thing is, you cannot buy anyone for more than £35 million, because if you do, you're in trouble. Those three rules mean that you have to basically tread very, very carefully and have to have an amazing scouting and transfer network and system. Leicester had that with all the players, Riyad Mahrez, Jamie Vardy, you can name them. Even someone like spending £22.5 million on James Maddison. Yuri Tielemans has spent £35 million, but it was money well spent. But buying Wesley Fofana for £30 million, selling for £75, £80 million. But what you can't do is spend any more than that on one or two players. You have to do it at Brighton and buy very, very low and sell very, very high. And that's just to survive in that top 10. I don't like those rules. I can't understand why a club the size of Leicester, Brighton, etc., there are many clubs of a very similar size who have 32,000, say, stadiums. I can't understand why the rules punish those clubs for being in the top 10, because essentially that's what they are. They're being punished for their success. And they're saying, enjoy it for a year or two, but that's how long it's going to be, because you can't sustain it unless you're buying £1 or £2 million players and selling them every year for £30 to £40 million. You can't survive that way. Brighton will end up going back down that way. You just can't survive. You might do for 3, 4, 5 years. Leicester enjoyed it for so long. And again, this is not kind of a moaning point of view from a Leicester fan, because this has been a great season. Enjoyed it. You know, this is technically what we've been brought up on at Leicester, getting promotion. But the rules are wrong. The amount that you can lose per season is fundamentally wrong, £35 million. And ultimately, when you've got clubs like Aston Villa reporting a £109 million loss in one season, and you're going, how are you going to make profit for two solid years to get past FFP? And then they come out with all sorts of sponsorship deals and business deals behind the scenes, Chelsea, the way they've operated, and you're sitting here as a football fan of a club going, hang on, we've gone a few hundred thousand, possibly, we could have signed a player, Sensi, for £1 million in January because of these rules. And then you've got Villa breaking the three-year rule in 1 year, and they've got to make a profit in 2 years. That doesn't sit well with me, because I know damn well that Aston Villa ain't going to make a profit in the next 2 years, and you know as well. So how they're going to get past these points, I have no idea. But guess what? They will.
Last little thing then is basically the weekend. As you said before, you can get something and scare them. Is that the general outlook? Be great to take it to extra time, be great to see some penalties? Or do you think that you could actually go there and win?
Hey, we went to Bournemouth and played them off the park with essentially a team of 10 changes. I think we'll make a lot of changes. I think there'll be some players, people like Vardy, etc. I'd imagine Vardy will be in Dubai at the moment. Just go away, basically. Go and rest for as long as possible. There's a few niggles in the squad. And give the players who have got Leicester to the FA Cup quarterfinals the chance to go to Chelsea and play the stuff. The one thing that Enzo Maresca has done, he brought in this style of football and he's completely gone through every single setup at Leicester, every single youth side, all the way through to the first team. And so when a player comes in, they know exactly what they're doing. So if it's a youth player, if it's a player who's making their debut, if it's a player who's in the squad, first team squad, who's not really been given a go, then they will know exactly what they're doing. So when they turned up on the pitch at Bournemouth in the previous round, it didn't look like a team of strangers, which it can do in FA Cup when you make so many changes. And I believe Leicester will go down there, and I think they'll give it their best. I think they'll score, and I think they'll take the game to Chelsea, and I think they'll surprise a lot of people who maybe haven't seen Leicester by the way they play. Ultimately, I think Chelsea will be too tough. I think they'll bring on players who ultimately they'll just have too much quality for Leicester. But I just hope Leicester, with the way that they play, the risky football they play from the rear, they don't make any silly mistakes, give away simple goals. If they don't do that, then who knows? At half-time, I wouldn't be surprised if Leicester are in front. And then it's game on. It's the FA Cup. Who knows what could happen? And maybe we'll be back now in Wembley for a semi-final in the FA Cup for the second time in 2 or 3 years. That'd be nice. But
it would be nice.
We'll see.
It would be nice. Always a pleasure to speak to Pete. Hopefully we'll get more of him again next season. But anyway, let's get back over.
Great stuff from Pete. Back with Tez and I'm with Chris. Chelsea, for me, Chris, the correct answer to what I've said is the big question of the season. Who do you think will finish seventh? I've had a look, and I'm now of the view, I will settle on, with the remaining league games, 10 to go, that Chelsea will finish seventh. They are the league's men of mystery.
So I'm going to go form Chelsea, logic, like literally anyone else. So, crack on. But yeah, because you look at, you've got Brighton, Brighton in a situation of getting tonked away in Europe and then celebrating a sort of home win against Forest, which kind of has re-leveled them a little bit. West Ham just seem like thoroughly miserable.
It's really weird, misery to league position, to occasional result, to misery, to the great goal, to David Moyes' face.
And even their chants go from like, the Bubbles is pretty, it's pretty like low energy-wise, the song, and then there's one about Bowen that's a bit bigger. Like they don't seem to know what they're doing, but they just seem grumpy.
They do seem grumpy, yes.
Someone's not jellied their eels. And I think that then, so you look at that and then you think, our game in hand is against Spurs, which, judging by the last one, anything can happen. So I sort of think the momentum, I do think there's this like tenacity from Chelsea at the minute.
It's a really weird, the oddest tenacity football's ever seen. They will not be stopped, but no one's quite sure what they won't be stopped from.
Yeah, and that's it. So they seem to have this tenacity and this belief, but it's occasionally lacks application. And yeah. Do you know what I mean? So they'll lose tenaciously. And they'll lose together, and they won't sort of like.
They're too nice. That's my thing with Chelsea.
See, I've got this thing where I think Chelsea are exactly what everyone said they'd be, and that seems to annoy people. in that they are a young, inconsistent team where they've tried to bet the farm on. Like, if you look at it, and I've said it before, if you look at it as a project and you accept it as a project, they've tried to pay 12 or so million a year for quite a while for someone to come good in maybe the fourth year, and you wouldn't have got them for 40 million at that. That feels like the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay in some ways, but they are also, they're all in that situation where there's no sort of like, oh, they're that guy. A bit like the City thing, but in a different way of like, because that's why Gallagher's looked so good this season, because Gallagher's kind of the only person who's got near to those lines and those edges.
But the issue with someone like Gallagher is that Gallagher had never played for a club this size at this consistent level. Gallagher's performance were Palace, Charlton, West Brom, and it kind of shows that you spend 300 million on a whole new set of midfielders, but your homegrown boy that you want to sell at the end of the season is the captain and that, the best midfielder.
That's where the manager is getting so interesting for me, because I like him, and I think you have to accept that what he's doing is not only showing shoots, but like you can justify almost most of it. And I think giving Gallagher the armband, kind of holding the upstairs to a bit of like football culture of like, we're going to have to anchor you down a bit, because yeah, he is a sellable asset. Yeah, he is going to get us this, but I need him because the other two, they're not going to do this. And like you said, I think the ability maybe isn't there, but he is doing things for the team and scoring.
Don't get me wrong, I think he's a decent player.
And I think we spoke about him quite early on in a much more optimistic way of he's maybe the Lallana to this generation, sort of the Jurgen Klopp player of he's going to squeeze everything he can, they'll shake hands, whenever they see each other, they'll have a big cuddle and he'll be wearing a different top, and that sort of is what it is. But yeah, I sort of think you've got this thing also where Chelsea are just, everything's a shock. Every result is not what you expect it to be in every direction too. So I hear what you're saying, Neil. I think it's the first time I'm going to accept that it's in reach. I think it's the first time I'm going to accept that the players seem to genuinely kind of, not like want it in that sort of like Naf Alan Brazil way, but actually be like, we're better than we've been, and now we can actually justify and we can look at our mates and we can see things. And the reaction to like Mudryk scoring and Palmer sort of interviews when Sherwood put him on the spot. There's something there which I think people, I was definitely crying out for at the start, and I kind of quite liked the idea of this manager, this group of players, but then there was no justification to like it for a long time. And now you are, or I'm certainly beginning to be like, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching us play. Like, I'm quite looking forward to watching us play for a while. And the game that changed that for me was Villa in the last round of the Cup. I then enjoyed Leeds. Just because that same thing of like, it's sort of like, oh, this is actually fun. This, like, something's happening. Like, yeah, they might and we might, but then he comes on and actually they're going to chuck Mudryk on, he'll do something, they'll look after him, or I don't know. And I've started to be like, no. Yeah, it's all right.
No, this is the sort of the personification of that to an extent. You'd have thought it might be one of the midfielders. You might have argued somewhere else, but it's Nick Jackson. He is for real.
I fucking love him. I love him. I've always loved him. I just think he's just absolutely batshit mental. He's so talented, and he's almost becoming that embodiment of what this again. I hate that this sort of like wanky project idea is of. They've seen something, and his sort of like in pre-season, which is no metric at all, it was fun watching him just bounce off other players and those flicks and those spins, and he's quite Giroud. And then you see him do things and you think, oh, there's so many parallels to like Drogba's early seasons. And then you sort of start thinking, well, we paid this for him and he's this, and like you kind of start to believe. And you think the thing you need all young players to have, and especially young strikers, is a short memory, because he will miss big chances. But the point is, and it sounds so naff, but he's getting them. Also, he's not missing them like next time, or we're now seeing like the goal. It was the Leeds goal again, just a great finish. Again, on the headers, he started binging into his game. Like he's just great. And I think you're really starting to see that he's someone who's been bought in, been looked after, been kind of introduced. I thought taking him off in the final was a massive dropping of a bollock as well, because he was just beginning to like grow into that sort of event. And to him, football is events, and I just love him. I think he's everything.
Very present. Numbers are interesting. Just from stats bomb, just a little bit for you there. 0.49 expected goals per 90. That as a 91st percentile, which is rock solid. Dead interesting because people would describe him as being a little bit chaotic or perhaps a little bit brainless. Pressure regains is really high. Just for a quick definition, a pressure regain is that you press someone and the opposition, you get the ball back within 5 minutes. Sorry, 5 seconds. Not 5 minutes. Christ, 5 seconds of that pressure.
I can do that.
Exactly. And all good on that one. Within 5 seconds, you get it back, and he's 91st percentile for that as well, which is really good. Pressure's 87th percentile for the position, obviously not for everyone in the league. And also expected goals per shot, and this is the one for me, Chris.
Yeah,
it's 0.21 xg per shot on average. That's 96th percentile.
See, I'm
that's sort getting of, into good positions.
So you've basically numberfied what I was saying of I think he's in the 91 percentile for fucking everything, and I mean that daft. I mean daft yellows too. I mean like big celebrations. I mean, it's everything. I'm not seeing him take a throw in. I imagine he's in the foul throws too. He just everything. everything is. I'm in the top. I'm in the 1%. That's what I'm doing. And that's what I'm here to do. And I just think he is. If you're someone like Cole Palmer, you just love him being near you. You can see the Mudryk's enjoyment. It's a shame how Nkunku's season's kind of played out, because they were fun for that sort of summer. And it sounds, I sound like a jilted lover. But
what a summer romance it was.
My summer with Christopher and Nicholas was one to remember. So I sort of think, and then you look at this game and you go, yeah, that short memory thing's come back in, because this is massive for this lot, because this whole season's massive, because I think they've always been convinced and they've always been sold this idea and they've always seen the progress, or they've been... I think the manager's possibly maybe quite good at also spinning things for their eyes of why he's pleased, because he's really like, he's quite low-key in public, and I think his decision's not been that sort of, I'll take the media heat and I'll protect you, of like, I'm just not worried about it. I'm not worried about anything you do, and I'm going to enjoy the good, but I'm not going to worry about the bad. Because some of our results and performances have been like the dregs and have been really like almost needlessly crap. Like, I mean, the way at Anfield was just like fictional levels of sort of like shit. And then you see them, but then they go again, or they get a big result. Like I said, Villa away was just immense. It was so good. And so I sort of think you've got to, maybe there's a point where at the end of this season and they do finish maybe seventh and get to two finals, or get to another day at Wembley in the semi. And you have that sort of like, you can't not give them a bit of credit for this now.
From a Leicester point of view, Tezza, I always think, and it's interesting because it has tightened up at the top of the Championship for them, but I always feel as though the runaway leaders of the Championship could do with a game where they get to see what it's like to breathe air at this level a little bit, with as little pressure on it as possible. And that's what this is for Leicester, really. They're not going into it with any expectation, but they can feel as though there is the chance of getting to Wembley again, because, you know, the good thing about Chelsea, whether you like it or not, is they're capable of beating anyone and capable of being beaten by anyone. It's one of the reasons why everyone feels so alive in the moment, and Leicester therefore can get something out of it, but they'll learn a thing or two too.
Yeah, Leicester are a very interesting team, because obviously there was a turnover from the summertime from when they were relegated, but majority of that Leicester squad and the Leicester team they have look like a Premier League team playing in the Championship. A bit similar to Leeds and Southampton. It's quite rare that you have three teams go down and they're just out and out in the top three, four. Usually it's one, maximum two, but all three of them just look like, yeah, we made a mistake last season. We should be straight back up in the Premier League. And I think for Leicester, some of these players, they've got quite a few good players on loan. The right winger, the Ghanaian right winger, obviously he's from Sporting, the likes of Doyle and a few other players who might actually just be thinking, if I impress in this game, you know, even if it's not a case of I'm going to go and play for Leicester next season in the Premier League, I'm actually going to be playing at a similar level, and let me try and, you know, show that I can compete against the, you know, the billions that Chelsea have spent. And I think for Maresca, as we were saying off camera, he was obviously part of City's backroom staff. He was with Pep. He might be thinking, you know, all it takes is for me to kind of show my tactical nous and my ability for me to then also be in the Premier League next season. Because the Premier League, what is happening in the Premier League now is there's a few clubs that are looking at, you know, managers who probably in yesteryear wouldn't have been given a chance. I think of Gary O'Neill or Iraola, Bournemouth, etc., who have just shown that if you stick with us and you allow me to play my football, then results will come. Even look a bit, I know Burnley's a bit of a different case, but Kompany's still there and he'll probably still be there next season when they go down. But in 2 years, he might be at a completely different team because he's stuck with his principles and the way he wants to play. And I think Maresca and Leicester are kind of on a similar trajectory.
They are indeed. It'll be interesting. What will another cup final mean for Chelsea, Chris?
Like I said, this season's going to come down to like when the dust has settled, and like it does have that sort of noughties American, like I've said it before, like high school drama feeling to it. They're all going to sit down and open a cold one and be like, "Geez, man." Do you know what I mean? And I think a second cup final plays into that. I think ending the season with a bit of momentum plays into that. Just those experiences and those moments that you can't falsify, you can't create, and you can't just keep on talking about. Like, you can't just keep on saying, "Oh, Raheem, what does it feel like then to do something? What is it?" Or asking like Uncle Tiago what it was like to play in Porto and win a big trophy and things. And I think you've got to look at it from that point of view of, they're not going to be favourites unless something weird happens in these other quarterfinals or the other semi-finals, but they can enjoy it.
There we are. We very rarely do banter on this show. When I said, what would another cup final mean for Chelsea, Chris? I very much want them to just say defeat. But you know, we don't do that. We don't walk that line. We don't go down that path. We're too classy. Far, far, far too classy.
We just remove the fourth wall straight afterwards.
On to the biggest game of the weekend. With all due respect to everyone, it is Manchester United versus Liverpool. Always has been, always will be. Man United, a bit like Chelsea, but with better results and less laughs. Fair?
That's very fair. Manchester United...
Shouldn't it work that way, should it? It should be like the best result. The best result from a laugh should correlate, and yeah, here we are.
Yeah, hasn't been a laugh under Ten Hag this season whatsoever. And it's been a weird season, because last season I could give him a lot of grace for, you know, Manchester United, even though they are rich or they have... cash flow, well, we don't have cash flow anymore, but we have rich assets. There's been an issue with recruitment, which has been long stated, but under Ten Hag, the biggest issue has been that the club gave him too much power, and he kind of has used that power to further kind of exacerbate the issue of the signings that came in. And he's been proven that majority of his signings have just not worked. And I could have told you from the jump that these signings are not the players United needed.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you mix that with the tactics that he wants to play this season, which is confusing, because it's a little bit similar to last season, but this season was meant to be the evolution. This was meant to be last season you did what you did to kind of secure Champions League football. You got to we got to the FA Cup final. We should have done a lot better in Europe. Blame Maguire, blame De Gea. And you won the Carabao Cup. Like, this is a solid foundation to build on. And I think, and I've said it a couple times, I think he's bought into the whole, as Chris was talking about before, the football culture of, we are Manchester United. We need to be on the front foot. We need to try and be the team that takes the game to the opposition without actually acquiring the players to do that properly. So every time Man United play, I know we'll come on to it a bit later, I'm jumping ahead, but we concede so many shots.
You love conceding shots.
We love conceding shots, and it's frustrating, because from a manager's point of view, how does he sit with the players and the analysis team and think, this is all right, this... The only team in the Premier League to concede more shots than Manchester United this season is Sheffield United. And they're bottom of the league. Exactly. And they're bottom of the league, and they've conceded probably the most goals ever in this period of Premier League football in the last 15 years or so. And I think if you compare United last season to this season, we were not conceding this many shots. The players haven't changed majority, so it's the manager's tactics and how he wants the players to implement those tactics that is the biggest change. And I've said it before, this whole idea of your goalkeeper and your back four stay in one half of the pitch and you leave your defensive midfielder ahead of them on the island, and then the five players ahead of that defensive midfielder press the opposition, is such a weird, weird hybrid tactic that it doesn't work. But when it does work, the manager then also then comments on how we could have done more to control the game. And I think, what message are you telling them? I know it's difficult with the player personnel, because you kind of need the player personnel to implement the tactic you want. But from a team structure, I've seen other teams who have similar player personnel or lesser player personnel can keep the ball. Like, these aren't players that, you know, haven't played at the highest level. Casemiro, okay, I know his better days are behind him, but if the environment for him was to only make 5-yard passes and stay in his position, and he has two players alongside him, he'll look a lot better. Similar to when Chelsea fans used to get onto Jorginho, and then he's at Arsenal, you know, he's getting rave reviews, and it's just the environment. Arsenal squeeze the pitch. Manchester United don't squeeze the pitch. You have someone who can't run in big spaces, obviously they're going to look worse than they are. And I think Ten Hag, I don't know what his kind of MO is, because what do you then say to the players next season if you get some new players? Because it's weird.
The weirdness doesn't stop.
Yeah.
I think this is an important point, Tezza. I've only got the league numbers here, so I want to be clear about that, because obviously there's a couple of games against lesser opposition in the Cups. But since the turn of the year in the league, again, the stats bob numbers, shots conceded, Manchester United at the zero percentile with 20.6 a game across those eight games, shots conceded. Counter-attacking shots conceded, 1.75 a game, that puts them in the first percentile. That's almost the 0-1. Set-piece XG conceded 0.59, 0 percentile as well. That's how poor it is on the defensive radar. XG conceded 1.71, second percentile, because other percentiles aren't available. There's some all right in there. What's dead interesting is XG per shot conceded is 0.08, which is 89th percentile. Mm. So yes, they're giving the shots up, but they're not always of that higher value. The flip side of that is the 1-8 games, all comps. Yeah. That's why the weirdness doesn't stop. The 1-8 games, and you know, obviously there are three cup games in amongst there, but even in the Premier League, of the eight remaining Premier League games, they won five.
Yeah, I think the managers get, this is where the results and stats kind of are skewed, because the manager gets away with his tactics, because in 75% of the games that United play, they have majority better players in the moments that are decisive. So, you know, I know Onana's had a tricky start to the season, but since January he's been really good.
Yeah, been really good, yeah.
Some games he's shown why he's been bought in. When you have a Varane one-on-one penalty box defending, or a Garnacho dribbling, or a Rashford hitting one from 35 yards, or Hoyland now picking up form, all those things fall for you, and then the tactics almost don't matter, because the player quality enhances how you implement those tactics. But then the biggest issue is you take out two or three of those players and those deficiencies show really, really quickly. Whereas when I look at a team like Liverpool, no Trent, no Kanate, no Salah, no Curtis Jones, no Jota, you could have argued all of them would probably start if they're fit against City.
Yeah.
Klopp doesn't change how he plays. They play the same way. They have practiced in that. All the young boys come into it. They practice how they play. And that's infectious. Everybody knows it doesn't matter who we play. This is how we play. And that's what Man United lack. We kind of alter how we play depending on the players' quality. Obviously, that also is down to the squad we have, because it's not balanced. But at the same time, the manager could be ruthless and say, I'm going to try and play this way, and this way is how we're going to get the best out of the group that I have.
It's got that thing where, I thought that was absolutely fantastic, Tez, but as I'm sat there listening, I'm thinking, it's almost like he wants them to interpret it in a way. He's setting them up with a new interpret. And you hear that a lot of, like, the coach wants the player to interpret the thing, but they don't know what the thing is. And again, it's that thing of they flip the seasons of, like, that in your second season gets you a couple of cup runs in moments and gets you deep-ish in Europe, but it comes on stock. And you do, like, again, the idea that how can you look at those, that how can you be on par with Sheffield United with basically anything and not say, next week I want less shots.
Mm.
So that's a thing that I want to give to you to manage as a team. So if you're playing in whatever position, I want less shots. So get out there quicker and then just see what's the ripple of that? What's the collateral? Does it mean that the shots don't happen, they're getting behind because they like sell a dummy? Or does it mean that we just win the ball when we aren't winning it? We get a block in and then it goes to Garnacho's feet, or even like Anthony, like, not very good, but he can run 20 metres with the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not much will happen, but you are then up the pitch and different things happen. It does feel like, it is, unfortunately, weird is just it.
So what I'm most disappointed about with Ten Hag is it's almost like his understanding of player roles and what the player can offer versus what they're actually best at. So we saw under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, McTominay played the majority of his football in a pivot with Fred, with Pogba, with Matic, whoever, played deeper. And his role was, you're not going to be the best on the ball, but you're going to run, fight, duel. And if there's space to attack, you might score or from a set piece. And this season, it's been survival mode. Since that goal against Brentford, it was like, all right, McTominay, 6-for-4, good in the air, we play direct, he's good at striking the ball, that's my tactic for that. And then when McTominay's not on the team, you play Kobbie Mainoo in there. And Kobbie Mainoo came into the season, first start against Everton, and he was praised because he played as the deepest midfielder. But when Casemiro comes back, Mainoo now has to do something similar to what McTominay's asked to do. But because his individual qualities are different, it looks different. So it's very strange that we are playing based on who's available rather than creating a structure and saying we're just going to make slight tweaks. I think that's the biggest issue, because if against Liverpool, if you see Mainoo play and McTominay comes into it, the same issues will happen structurally, but within that, the players will play slightly different. So it's almost as if, as you were saying, he's asking that individual player to figure it out, but because of their own individual strengths, they figure out differently.
Yeah, and then there's part of me that starts having a modicum of sympathy for him in the sense of his better players are also just being so unreliable, inconsistent. Like, and I don't think there's that doesn't always land at his door. Like, who would you play last? Who was it you played in the other week?
We played Everton.
And Casemiro just, first half, just gave it away. But, and like, if you're, you shouldn't have to, as Ten Hag, think, oh, we'll have to get around Casemiro when he gives it away eight times in the first half. So then, the ripple effect of that means that you might have to put someone back and get someone like, Garnacho to tuck in. And he's not going to be good at that. And there's not the interpretation. So I do have a modicum of sympathy of like, the players that he's expected to be reliable and do certain things aren't doing it. So that then means that heads are spinning and they're looking around for someone to do.
There is an idea inside the club, though, that Ten Hag's kind of training methods and his level of intensity that he asks from the players day-to-day in the training sessions are not really gelling that well with the players. And the players have in the past said, like, what you want us to do in training works, but we're tired, especially from last season, because United played the most games, one of the most games in out of all the Premier League teams. I think there's been a malaise, because I remember the first game of the season against Wolves, and I was like, how are these players so knackered? It's the first game of the season, and it kind of carried on. And
that was so funny, that game.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And a lot of the injury issues, people are saying it's because of how United actually have to cover large spaces by doing those big sprints where the team is divided. And some of those injuries could have been avoided if, for example, we played in a way where we sit back as a team a little bit more, we attack as a team. We're almost doing two things at once. And that's why most of the games United concede a lot of shots, because he's almost saying defenders defend, attackers attack. Midfielders, if you can help out in both, do that. And it's really, really confusing. I think, honestly, if it was me, the only issue is, who do you bring in? But if I was sat with Sir Jim now, Brailsford, Omar Berada, I've them are mates and stuff. I've got them on speed dial. I'd say, listen.
You like to call your mates, sir.
I would call him sir.
All right, Jim. That sort of thing.
Respect. Sir J-Rap. Jim, Sir Alex, you know. I'd say, think long
club
and hard.
Club of Knighthoods.
Yeah, Club of Knighthoods. Sir me as well, next to him. I'd just say, like, realistically, like, with Ten Hag at the helm, it's not really going anywhere. Just, like, it's time for fresh eyes, you've brought in a fresh regime, you're going to go down a new kind of sporting director, CEO, COO, just bring in a new manager as well.
Yep, be interesting to see how they go about it. Very unlikely to get any sense. We're recording this before Liverpool have played, it's an important point, so Liverpool haven't even played the game yet against Sparta Prague. I think it's hard to work out, Chris, what to expect from Liverpool in a way. It's the end of a run, which sometimes means it's a little bit different. Fitness remains an oddity for Liverpool. I think the manager's been very clear that he's into rhythm, as you've been watching them all the way through this run. I think it's an odd little game. I think there's I honestly can't work out what to expect from the game from either side, really. I think it's a real question mark. You know, will United sit in? Will they be allowed to sit in? Will the attitude be, we just want to get out and get through and have these off from the United supporters? Or will there be an idea of, no, it's a cup game, we've got to sort of try to grab something? Can they do it at Old Trafford? They did it at Anfield. I'm very, very... I've got no real sense of what to expect of it as a game, which is really weird, because normally when it's Manchester United versus Liverpool, I'm very on top of what I think will, the way in which it will play out, if you know what I mean, even if I'm wrong.
I sort of think, latterly, this calendar year, Liverpool have done this thing where they've made really ordinary things feel and look extraordinary, like brushing aside the 11th best team in the league in a final, Forest away, Fulham at home. Obviously, that's before the calendar year. But they've, and I think that level of momentum.
Luton at home.
Yeah. That level of like, they made really sort of ordinary results feel massive and seismic, and like everyone else is like rolling their eyes at the fact, oh, whatever, they've done it again, so on and so forth. And I think that carries on, that level of momentum, that level of like, you know, this isn't going to stop anytime soon. And I think, obviously, next weekend being international, I imagine that, as he does with everything, Jurgen Klopp has somehow got that right and told them how to go away and enjoy it, and how the young lads are going to have this week with it. And I just think, as a club and as an institution, they're just so like getting everything right and playing. And I said, I don't see how you go to Old Trafford and get anything wrong in any stretch, whatever team he really picks to, because I just think they're just primed for sort of like moments, this team at the minute. And I don't know if that sees you the season out. I sort of think momentum's really important, but you've got out of some situations that could have been awful. And with the impact of not winning away at Forest or even...
Yeah. No, not winning away at Forest is enough. It's enough. Because for 2 points fewer right now, that table looks, you know, if Liverpool got 2 points, and also then it makes the City game harder.
Yeah.
Because we're all going into it thinking we've absolutely got to win. And that does happen during the game, but then it ebbs away for a period. I completely agree.
And speaking of lovely banter, if the rules are properly applied, they swing the ball back in, they bring Chris Wood back onto the field.
Somehow.
Mm. Yeah, he knocks it in, and then we're all talking about, we're putting blue ribbons on the trophy again. But you've ruined that for it. But that's fine. But what I'm saying is like, so does that carry on? And there's part of me that thinks, well, fucking obviously it does. Like, look at them. Like, when is this going to stop? Prague away, you think that's such a banana skin of like a European fucking 5-1. See you next time. Don't worry. And I just think that comes into this game, and you think if you are a United fan, or you're involved in United, you just think, well, it feels inevitable. Way more than City did the other week when you were winning. That felt like, That could change, but this just feels like, I think Liverpool will just, I think Salah probably plays, doesn't he? Probably so. Tonight and Sunday, and then like I said, they all go off for somehow an international break where they come back even happier and even fitter, and everyone's, and then City and Arsenal both lose the weekend after to each other, and again it is those things of like, there's miracles happening back to back to back to back to back, and it doesn't feel like it's going to stop. You know how like we spoke about Arsenal last year, and you think this somehow runs out. They're going to put petrol in this diesel car soon, or something's going to go wrong. I don't think it happens this weekend. I don't know when it does happen.
I think on that, what I've noticed, a bit similar to, well, Arsenal a little bit different because they're still building their momentum, and Jurgen's been there a longer time, and it's his last season. Arsenal and Liverpool, more so Liverpool, they just enjoy it. Like, it doesn't matter who they're playing. They just look like, the players go out there and think, this is going to be fun. Like the way you play with a sense of freedom when you're playing with your mates, they're playing like that. Like I watched the Liverpool versus City game, and there was a period of maybe from after Foden had that chance to 75, 80th minute where Liverpool were just dominant and ran riot. And you could tell, even the way the fans were jeering on the whole of the Liverpool team, the Liverpool players just enjoyed it. It was like, I love this. Like, this is a real kind of game, and whatever happens, this is great. And it reflected from Klopp's interview after the game.
Yeah.
He was like a fan. You wouldn't, if you were an outsider, you wouldn't thought this is the Liverpool manager. He was like, oh. And you're like, yeah, you're the manager. Like,
That was you.
They're your players. Like, you should be a lot more like intense in this, but he's not. He's just like relaxed, and I think that probably just seeps into all the players. Obviously, the professionals still want to win, etc. But they're just probably thinking, "This is great. This, like, whatever happens, it happens."
Okay. Yeah. And I just think the other thing is that they got at the minute is they don't only get better. They somehow steal the game in terms of, like, I thought against City at the weekend. Like, I put the TV off and was like, oh, Liverpool, like, that was really unlucky. But then you think, well, document the post, Foden should have scored. The one came off his face, hit the crossbar, and actually go, well, no, it was probably, if you were a City fan, you might be thinking, oh, we could have. But it just felt like you just owned the day completely, like, and I think that's the thing too, is like, there's the jeopardy feels not there, because you just forget. It's like someone of Men in Black to me, to all of those chances. at the end, like Diaz not make someone twice. Do you know what I mean? And that's the bit I'm thinking about on Monday morning. I'm not even Liverpool fan. Chelsea play Monday night, and I wake up thinking about a nutmeg that someone else did. It's a curse.
It is indeed. Anyway, there are league games, and is Phil Macbeth very bravely talking about Luton, especially after last night?
Very brave about the whole thing. I've got Phil Macbeth on a Thursday night after he lived his Wednesday night. His Wednesday night was Bournemouth 3, Luton 0. And there's a universe where there's a 4-3. If you're a side like Luton, you go away from home, you show a thing or two, you go 2 down, you pull it back to 2-2. They make it 3-2, you get one back, and then they get a late winner, and you say, you know what, these things happen, it stings, but we'll be all right. You've got the worst possible 4-3, Phil. The worst one.
Yeah, by an absolute mile. I've never experienced such unbelievable surprise and happiness, but then utter dejection within the space of 19 minutes, I think it took them to get us back to 3-3 after halftime. And it's been a nightmare of a day because everyone knows I'm a Luton fan and everyone wants to talk about it. So it's a dentist. You're lucky you've got me.
They've been part of an event, haven't you? One of those, really. Everyone, even though it wasn't even on the telly, you're probably glad it wasn't on the telly. You've been part of an event. Everybody knows about it.
Exactly, exactly. Like I say, I think it was one of those ones where I was keeping an update on the apps and everything like that, watching different passes and all this, that, or the other, trying to follow the game. But it was. I'm just glad I wasn't watching it, and glad I wasn't there last night, so yeah, it was good.
Was that in some ways? Well, in some ways. Do you think there's a problem second halves? Do you think there might just be a bit of a legs issue because these lads have given a hell of a lot? You know, there's been a fair few first halves recently that have been relatively impressive, and then second halves have been turned around, nothing as dramatic as this. Do you think that that's a thing?
Absolutely, yeah. I think if you look at the last sort of 4, 5, 6 games, we've been functioning with about 14 or 15 players and they're just absolutely been run into the ground. They're so fatigued. You can see it 60, 70 minutes comes around and they're just out on their feet. And I know there's been a lot of negativity within the sort of Luton fan base today about saying that we should have parked the bus in the second half and we should have been a lot more tight to try and make it more difficult for them to break through us. But we just didn't have the legs. We're playing players that, truth be told, they've played half an hour here or there. I'm talking about sort of Hashioka. Felt really sorry for him because he's not been brought in as a centre back, and he's having to fill a hole because we're just so depleted back there. And like I said, the same players are playing as many minutes as they possibly can. There's just no respite for them. The international break can't come quick enough. It just happens to be that we've had 2 incredibly important games. We've got another one coming up on Saturday, so they've just got to put up with it and keep working as hard as they possibly can.
It's one where there are positives to be taken. And I think that it's very easy, firstly, for someone like me to say that full stop, but it's also very easy, you know, for that to be lost in the ether because of the nature of the defeat. That for me, the big thing when I look at the bottom of the table is I just look at everyone and I say, yeah, but say what you want about Luton, they look like they can score a goal.
Yeah.
That goes a long way.
Yeah. I think, like I said, we've scored in every single Premier League game for a good sort of 18, 19 games, I think it is. It's been a long time since someone kept a clean sheet against us. So we've got it in us going forward. It is just that. It's just being able to keep a tight ship at the back and be able to stop those attacks going in against us. I mean, we had a bit of an anomaly in that sense against Crystal Palace because it was the opposite. So we kept on going and we eventually got a chance. But the reality of it was that was a point stolen. And I know that a lot of people think these things equal out over the course of the season. And I think that was a little bit of justice for us because we've been hard done by late in the past. But recently, like I say, it's just been really tough to keep the gates shut. And we can't always outscore people. Like I say, that there's quality around the whole Premier League, and as much as we can score 1, 2, 3, or even 4, it just seems like it's a bit of a tricky one for us at the moment to get some points on the board.
It's a big, big game, the weekend. It would have been bigger again if you'd have managed to hold on. If you win, you probably go above Forest, given what will happen with goal difference and goal. I think you have to. I've just checked the match there, and I think that if you do win, you're currently minus 18, then minus 16. If you win, there's a goal, so both minus 17 as a minimum, and you're higher on goals scored. So you do go above Forest if you beat them. You are at home. There's the idea of the threat that hangs over Forest, whether we want to talk about it or not, it's there. If Forest win, though, they create a 6-point buffer for this one. It is a massive game at 3 p.m. on Saturday, isn't it?
Oh, it's enormous. It's absolutely enormous. And like I said just a minute ago, I mean, this week has potential to be everything for our season, really. And the game on Saturday, like I say, it's the bona fide six-pointer. It's the definition of a six-pointer, isn't it? Quite literally. So we've got to give absolutely everything before this break, because I've said it to you before in the past, Neil, that our home fixtures are quite friendly towards us.
Yeah.
But it's the away ones are, you may as well write them off, if I'm being honest. And that sounds incredibly negative. But
just to sort of clarify that for listeners, your next three aways are Tottenham, Arsenal and Manchester City.
Yeah. So it's going to be a case of keeping the goal difference as healthy as we possibly can, I think, especially against the likes of Man City and Arsenal. So it's going to be incredibly tough. And like I say, I think it's all our eggs into this particular basket this weekend. If we've got a few players that have got 45 to 60 minutes in the legs that are coming back, then I think we need to utilise them and give them a couple of weeks break to then recover. But we have to put everything into Saturday. It's crucial.
Give me a prediction.
I'm going to go for a tight one. I think, as we've just discussed, we can't keep a clean sheet. So I'm going to go for a classic Kenilworth Road 3-2. We like a 3-2. So I'll take that.
I mean, I just hope for all of you it's not a 3-2 where you go 3-0 up and they just get two back. The 10 minutes after it goes 3-2 will be agonising for everyone.
Yeah.
Great stuff from Phil. Let's get back over.
Great stuff from Phil. Just very quick on the one that sort of strikes me as an interesting one. It's interesting from United's point of view, I suppose, as well. Tezza over the weekend is Fulham versus Tottenham.
Yeah.
Fulham are, again, they're another team that appear to be having a nice time. Mm-hmm. You don't quite know what you're going to get. It's three wins in the last six with a draw and two defeats. They're capable of, from nowhere, just doing Tottenham's head in.
Yeah, Marco Silva feels like one of their managers that should be about 60, and he's not. He's probably mid-40s or so.
Like me.
Yeah. I don't think he should be 60, but yeah. But I think they go under the radar, Fulham, because they're that kind of, we're not going to get relegators, but we don't have enough of a budget to have the players to push for Europe. But, you know, this season they beat West Ham 5-0 or... Mm. You know, the odd time we'll...
Arsenal they beat?
Beat Arsenal, we'll go to Old Trafford, we'll beat them. Like, it's fun. Everything's fun and it doesn't really get into the... Well, I know in the beginning of the season, you know, when they lost Mitrovic and Paulinho was linked to go, it seemed a bit ominous that, you know, they might be in a relegation battle, but that was quickly cleared up. And they've just kind of progressed since then, and I think... They play decent football. They've got some underrated players who some of them might actually be leaving. And like Adebayo, I think his contract's up. But
good player.
He's a good player. Yeah, and you kind of look at the squad and you go, But then when you look at them individually, you're like, oh, actually, you should be playing for like a Champions League level team. And they're probably one of the teams that people just ignore. But when you actually play them, you're like, Fulham are a good team.
He's a good player. He's a good player.
Yeah.
I was in the Goodison in the Cup game, and they were just class. They're just arm's length. They were really good. And I think they're one of those teams that every like decade or so has that season, which they then talk about for the next. And they do it. And I think if this squad and this manager, and you think maybe a Brighton knackered, obviously West Ham looking like there might be that space next season for them to be that team that just doesn't stop.
Well, Fulham. But in the 2010s, just before 2007, Hodgson,
Danny Murphy,
Clint Dempsey, Zamora.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And getting to the Europa League final back then. They're
due that. Yeah. They are. And you sort of, like you said, you can reason your way, because I don't imagine they need to sell all those players, or I don't imagine they need to not offer those contracts. So you do wonder if they're going to maybe... And also, a lot of those seasons tend to start... just about now the season before.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get that weird thing where you'll be given form and it goes back to like the March.
Mm.
And it's because that's when it, in the same way the negative side of sometimes teams have been shit since the new year, but it doesn't feel till like the January after you notice it. So yeah, I think it could actually be quite a good game this.
Yeah. But I also do think Fulham have to work hard to keep the manager, because I feel he's had his little thing, a hole which kind of propelled him probably too soon in the Prem. Then he got given a big budget at Everton, but didn't really
Watford, not Hull. Sorry, I just checked that. He was at Watford.
He was at Hull as well.
He went to Hull because he was came from Portugal.
Yeah,
came from Portugal because he's one of those managers.
2017, he was the Hull manager.
Yeah, who players love. He took Hull down.
Olympiacos.
He took Hull down.
He joined late. He joined late. Took them down and then came back through Watford and stuff. But he's one of those managers that you always hear.
Right. Yeah.
Players love him. Players always talk him up and say like he was class. He did this, and so I think he's kind of had a weird career where he must be quite frustrated at his career sometimes.
I think so.
Yeah, he's had 20. Sorry, you're completely right. He had 22 games at Hull, only won 8. Then went to Watford, and then from Watford went to Everton, and he's only really at Hull and Watford for 1 year, for one calendar year.
And that was his trajectory. Everton do top four, and then Art Wenger leaves, or whoever, or by that point it'd be Emery, and then he gets that. That was kind of his path.
Was he at Olympiacos as well?
Yeah, Olympiacos.
The reason why I remembered so vividly is because Paul Merson was like, "Oh, who's this? Why are they getting him?" Paul Merson actually said, "I can win the league at Olympiacos because the Greek league is nothing." And then he came in, and then it was like, oh, actually, he's got Hull playing, like Harry Maguire bringing out the ball from back and stuff.
Andy Robertson,
he changed his whole.
Jared Bowen?
I think so, potentially.
What happened to any of them?
Yeah. And he just kind of, his whole kind of, you know, philosophy was kind of like, oh, actually, he's better. And obviously, he managed Richarlison and Decore and all those at Watford as well. He brought them in. So he's got a track record of.
Are you suggesting training? He's going to do the reverse Rafa, the old reverse, and go from blue to red?
No, I was actually thinking if West Ham need a new manager.
Oh, that's boring. Come on.
It'd be interesting though.
But it would be interesting. Bowen's there. You know, West Ham now a Conference League kind of bit higher than Fulham. Still stays in London. You know,
but it's just dull, is what I'm saying. I think let's start now.
Let's get a campaign to get him to start now.
And he can stink another place out of Merseyside.
What next Liverpool manager?
That's what I'm saying. The reverse Rafa.
It'd be very, very funny. There'd be things on fire.
Yeah, there will be.
Because then when we beat you in every final, we can call him Silver Marco.
Excellent stuff. Right, it's been a really good show. Enjoyed every single second of it. Do check those games out. Premier League games, do keep an eye on them. I do think Fulham versus Tottenham will also be worth watching. Thank you very much to Tezza and to Chris and to all of our callers. Back next week with more of this. No, we're not. It's an international break. Back the week after.
I might pop in on my own.
Yeah, God knows what's next week. Just us having a nice chat.
Yeah. Sports Social Podcast Network.